And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. Wednesday, December the 12th, 2018, 16 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. And breaking news, moments ago, Michael Cohen, President Trump's longtime lawyer and fixer, has been sentenced to 3 years in prison, 36 months at this point. So that is very interesting. With the sentencing guidelines that came down last week for Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen, and is a government shutdown on the way? There's so much to talk about. No better person to talk about that with than a guest I love having on. She's a reporter for the Daily Beast and also a panelist on the long-running television series The McLaughlin Group, Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, 36 months for Michael Cohen. What do you think?
I think that's peanuts compared to all his crimes and the all the likely sentences that have been discussed in the last week or so. And 3 years in a kind of a, I don't know, an upper-class prison, maybe time off for good behavior, I think he should be very relieved. I think that's a very good deal for him. And it's, you know, may well be entirely appropriate. This is a white-collar crime. And he has provided a lot of information to the special counsel, to Robert Mueller. And I think that's where the payoff will be. And I think it was the fact that Mueller weighed in and basically talked about the cooperation he had given. It really does go up against the Southern District of New York, which seemed to really want to put him away for life. So I think let's wait and see what he's told Mueller. Maybe this is a very good deal for the American people as well as Michael Cohen.
You know, it's interesting, Eleanor. I've been thinking about this since the sentencing memo came out last week from Mueller in the Southern District of New York. When it comes to Michael Cohen, do you think this 36 months is more about the tax fraud or the campaign finance violations?
Tax fraud or campaign violations? It seems to me that tax fraud might be something that the American people might care a little bit more about. I mean, you already see the Republicans pushback on this, that campaign violations, oh, everybody gets convicted of that, and if they really applied those laws faithfully, everybody in the Congress would have a problem. Tax violations, again, Trump's base is going to look at that and say, okay, nobody wants to pay more taxes than they should, and okay, so he maybe he fudged a little here and then. You know, again, I keep looking at how these charges are going to affect the people who support Trump. And so far, I don't see any breakthrough, but we're just in the early stages of all of this, and I think the Republican line is still holding strong, and I thought some of the comments from Republican Senate leaders, you know, Orrin Hatch saying none of this matters, you know, he's doing a great job as president. Basically, I think it was Senator Kennedy from Louisiana who said, you know, Jesus loves Michael Cohen, but everybody else thinks he's a sleaze, and, you know, who cares what he says, and how can you believe anything he says. So I'm still waiting for the, you know, crime or the alleged crime that will, you know, break through to the rock-solid support that this president has with roughly a third of the country.
You know, Eleanor, and correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, but since last week, since Friday, when the sentencing memos came down, this is something I don't quite understand. Now we know that Michael Cohen certainly got prison time. 3 years, he is getting prison time. Now, it's my understanding that in those sentencing papers, he pretty well names President Trump. It's person number one, but as the person who directed him to commit these campaign crimes. Now, it's also my understanding that you cannot pardon yourself, and you cannot be pardoned out of a state crime. Now, a lot of thought has been given to the idea that you cannot indict a sitting president. So how does Donald Trump avoid prison time if the moment he's not president? Is there any chance the Southern District is not going to indict him when that happens? I guess is what I'm saying.
The Southern District seems pretty determined, and the newly installed Attorney General of New York, a woman, I can't come up with her name right now, but she seems, you know, pretty hell-bent on going after the president for some of the other violations, the Trump Foundation, that sort of thing. I think the presidency protects Donald Trump, and I think we are going to have a vigorous debate over whether the presidency should be allowed to protect a president, and it's going to go back and forth, and it could well go to the Supreme Court. I think we are in, you know, uncharted territory here. But if the president does avoid getting charged with any of this while he's in office, I do think that the Southern District is going to go after him as soon as he leaves office. I think that's pretty obvious, and they're not going to drop their case and say, "Oh well, now that he's not president anymore, we'll just forget about it."
Well, that's the interesting thing because, as I said, you cannot pardon somebody for a state crime, so there's no way he could be pardoned, as Nixon was. And the moment he's not president anymore, whether that's at the end of his term, I don't think the statute of limitations will be up on this. Is this the first time that a president, a former president, really faces time in jail whenever that time may come?
Oh, I think that's right. I mean, because Nixon did get the pardon, and Nixon was only facing federal charges, There were no state charges against him. And Gerald Ford, by pardoning Nixon, ensured that Nixon wouldn't face a criminal trial after leaving office. So, yeah, I mean, this is a first, obviously. And I think the feelings about this president and the way he has just, you know, stomped on all the norms of the presidency, the enrichment of himself and his family, the mingling of foreign policy interests with his business interests. There are so many levels to go after him. And I think, you know, we've got the impeachment proceedings that are likely to get underway in the House once the Mueller report is filed. It's hard for me to see how they can avoid that. They need to take it slowly, though, and let's wait and see what Mueller has to say and all that. But this president is facing both political problems and legal problems. And the legal problems will certainly continue after he leaves office, whether it's in 2021 or if he should happen to win a second term. It's hard for me to imagine that he would, but I think it's possible, and you have to keep that in mind.
Something that's interesting to me, before we get to the Mueller side of this, with Michael Cohen, that instance, there is some Mueller involvement to that when it comes to Russian dealings, but this particular thing that Michael Cohen was sentenced to today had to do with his own personal dealings, campaign finance, tax fraud, so on and so forth, dealings with the Trump Foundation. Now, if President Trump is person one, and we pretty well all know that he is, named in these indictments.
Individual
number one. That's who it is. So if Michael Cohen gets 36 months for cooperating with the Southern District, even though they say he lied about his own personal things, is there any chance that President Trump is not the big fish, and giving Michael Cohen less time would mean more time for the president?
Yes, except, again, we don't want to be seen as a banana republic where we go after people once they're out of office. But, I mean, if these are legitimate crimes. I mean, I think you have to take it to its legitimate conclusion. And there's no way he could be pardoned. You know, with Michael Flynn, I think the fact that he had served the country so well for so many years played into the appeals they're making on his behalf. I don't know, could you say President Trump, unemployment was at its lowest mark in 50 years when he was president, and give him that? I don't think so. I mean, I think he is in danger of possibly going to jail. And you know, the tweeting that he's doing, and I think he's kind of coming undone. And yet, I think his legal issues are greater than the threat he faces from possible impeachment, because impeachment is a trap for Democrats unless 20 Republicans are willing to join them in the Senate to convict. Otherwise, the president could just claim he was exonerated. And so far, the Republican Party, there are some cracks beginning to appear, but so far, not enough people are willing to abandon him. And I guess you could argue that his support in the base of the party remains strong. Base of the party is smaller than it was, but they're still with this president. And you know, if you want to go down that road of conversation, then you worry about what would the president do, and would he kind of incite his people? Would he see this as a coup? I mean, there are so many ways you can sort of spell this out. And I think the Democrats are very wise to take it slowly and carefully.
You know, Eleanor, the thing that blows my mind is because President Trump is in his first term, I think at this point, no matter what the Mueller investigation turns out, I do think that we are going to see impeachment proceedings in the House, I think because it's democratically controlled. And I think with the memos last week, the sentencing guidelines with Flynn and Cohen and Manafort, what we learned, I think Democrats are just waiting to get the final report. I don't know that conviction would happen in the Senate for the Mueller crimes, but Trump does have to run for re-election. And this whole thing in the Southern District, his lawyer's going to be in prison for crimes that his lawyer says he directed him to do. So when the Democrats run against him, I mean, it's basically we're running against a person who, if he loses this election, is going to be indicted on January 21st, 2020.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
You would think that would be a pretty easy campaign, wouldn't you?
You would think.
But I'm just listening to all of the Republicans saying, oh, I mean, these are the same Republicans who condemned Bill Clinton for sexual misconduct and who impeached Bill Clinton, but a Republican Senate failed to convict Clinton on perjury and obstruction of justice. It requires two-thirds a vote, and they weren't even able to muster a bipartisan majority vote against him. And Clinton's approval rating went to 73% during he was seen as being railroaded by a bunch of sex-obsessed Republicans. But the dynamics this time are that the same Republicans who were so upset about the rule of law and Clinton and all that are now saying, oh, well, paying off porn stars, no big deal. John Edwards paid off his mistress. Campaign violations, no big deal. I think there's got to be, more to come, and I'm sure there is. Mueller is conducting a leak-proof, very careful probe, and I'm wondering if he's going to ensnare members of Trump's family. And you've got the president now losing his chief of staff. Apparently, he hasn't been on speaking terms with John Kelly for weeks, and Kelly is now going to stay until they find a new person, and the president is saying, oh, lots of people are angling for this job. Whoa, walking into that snake pit and defending this president against what's going to be possibly an impeachment trial, but lots of subpoenas and lots of investigations, that's not a particularly fun job to have, especially when Trump doesn't really take any advice and turns on people who are close to him, with even the smallest inclination. If you're seen as somehow disloyal, you're done in his eyes. So this is a spectacular time that we are living in. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you read about in history books or maybe a movie script. I think we're all just wondering how it's going to unfold. And here we are going into the holidays, and you have the president throwing another monkey wrench into everything by threatening to shut down the government if he doesn't get money for his wall. And I thought it was a remarkable scene to be able to watch the back and forth in the Oval Office, which the president, I think, thought he had orchestrated to his benefit, but instead it was democracy in action and was kind of give and take that I like seeing. And I don't think the president got the best of the back and forth with the Democratic leaders.
If you had to bet right now, do you think we're headed toward a shutdown?
No. On the McLaughlin Group last week, I predicted no shutdown and no money for the wall. And I also predicted they wouldn't vote on the criminal justice reform bill, which Mitch McConnell, now the Senate leader, Republican leader, now seems to have changed his mind. And that's a good thing. That's a good bill. And I hope they do vote on it and pass it. And they would pass it with bipartisan vote. The Republicans do not want a shutdown, and the president has now owned it. He said, it's my shutdown. I won't blame you. And the Republicans don't have the votes among themselves for a wall in the House, and they can't get the 60 votes in the Senate. So it would be prudent for the president to accept some sort of face-saving compromise, which I think they've come up with. They call it, money to secure the border, and he talks about portions of the wall being built. That's not true. I think they kind of routinely repair fences or whatever they do, but he's turned this into the end all and be all of his presidency. So, but again, if this were normal times, you would look at this as showboating for your base. And everybody was doing that in that Oval Office meeting. I mean, Chuck Schumer has to look tough because Democrats really were angry at him for leading them into a shutdown the last time, which didn't work out too well. Nancy Pelosi, she came across as the best leader in the room, and that did her a lot of good going into the vote for her speakership in January. And I think, Trump was thinking, I'm looking strong and I can really orchestrate this. And it backfired on him. But I think he has to compromise. There's no, and the Republicans do not want to own a government shutdown. I mean, that would crater the party even further than it already is. So, again, if this were normal times, that would all be showboating. And yes, they will work something out, and they won't be here between Christmas and New Year's, which they're now threatening, and they will get an agreement, by December 21st or 22nd. But those are normal times, so you always have to hedge it. these are the Trump times, and I suppose if he wants to take his hissy fit that far, I mean, he could really do even more damage to himself and the Republicans. I don't see that it ends well if he insists on a government shutdown.
You know, Eleanor, this is what last week with the Flynn, Manafort, and Cohen sentencing guidelines memorandums. This is where I think a conundrum was created last week for the president, and possibly why he is very uptight this week, because there are only three ways that we've ever seen to leave the presidency: being voted out, which who knows what'll happen there; impeachment and conviction in the Senate, which has impeachment in the House, conviction in the Senate, which has never happened; or resignation, like Richard Nixon did, and a pardon. Well, here's the problem, because I think there's long been a thought that impeachment and conviction in the Senate was not going to happen. But there was always, I thought, this feeling about if his son was indicted, if Kushner was indicted, that Trump might pardon and then resign. Well, if he would resign now, like Nixon did, he would be indicted in the Southern District.
Right, exactly.
So he's up the creek without a paddle.
Right.
I don't know what he does.
I don't either. And you would think if his family is implicated in this way, that he would pardon them. But he himself, I think, would have to stay. He has to stay in office to keep from going to jail. I mean,
that's the conundrum.
It's totally bizarre. Unless, well, there's one way out. Spiro Agnew, who was Richard Nixon's vice president, was found to have accepted bags of cash in the old executive office building, and he made a plea deal. And my recollection is not good enough, so I don't know if it was just federal charges or he was a real criminal coming out of Maryland, and so maybe there were state charges there. But he had some sort of a plea deal which allowed him to resign and leave office without going to jail. So that would be worth going back and looking at. And in fact, Rachel Maddow has a podcast out. It's called Bagman, and I'm not sure if that was just, I think she's doing several episodes about Spiro Agnew. So that's the only, I guess you could say Richard Nixon also made the deal, but he didn't face any state charges. So the key is whether Agnew was facing state charges as well. I don't know the answer to that. That's worth looking up.
Interestingly enough, though, I guess my question would be, in that particular situation, what would the Southern District have to gain by taking a plea deal from Donald Trump at this point?
Oh, I think it's the same argument that Gerald Ford made, that this is a president. People just want the long national nightmare to be over. We're not a banana republic. We don't go after people once they're out of office. And I think those arguments, they didn't even make sense at the time for a lot of people with Nixon. A lot of people wanted Nixon tried and see him go to jail. And then I think people came around as the years passed. And I remember Ted Kennedy awarded Gerry Ford their, it's kind of a profile in courage, the award that the Kennedy family gives out every year. And they gave it to Gerald Ford. And Kennedy's remarks at the time said, you know, a lot of people disagreed with the action that you took. And he said, I was one of them. And I think he actually quoted many of the things he said. And he said, over the years, I have come to see you were right, and that pardoning Nixon was the right thing to do. So there was a change in attitude there. So I think if Trump is, quote, let off the hook in some way, if they find some way to let him, you know, resign and avoid jail term, maybe pay big, I don't know that he's as rich as he says he is, but maybe pay a big fine. A lot of people will want to see him pay. pay the price and would like to see him in an orange jumpsuit. But I think you can make the argument that that was made on Nixon's behalf. And it certainly would not please everybody. But I think, you know, there are two sides to how you can handle that. How much, you know, retribution you want, how much blood you want to extract in exchange for what he's put the country through, or do you want to just say, okay, that's it, he's out of power, let's be satisfied with that, and we don't need further vengeance.
It's interesting. I looked it up here. On October 10th, 1973, Spiro Agnew appeared before a federal court in Baltimore and pleaded no contest to one felony charge, tax evasion, for 1967. Richardson, the prosecutor, agreed that there would be no further prosecution of Agnew and released a 40-page summary of the evidence. Agnew was fined $10,000, placed on 3 years of unsupervised probation, and at the same time, Agnew submitted a formal letter of resignation to the Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger. So I guess part of his deal was that he would leave the office.
Right, exactly. So that kind of has the outlines of what could be done with Trump, doesn't it?
If he was willing to leave, I would say.
If he's willing to leave, and he's getting out of the felony charge, and that's okay. Baltimore, Maryland, and the Southern District of New York. I think that would be possible if he agrees to leave in exchange for not having to go to jail. That might be a very good deal for him,
Eleanor,
especially if he can pardon his family on his way out the door.
Well, that becomes an interesting thing, though, Eleanor, in this, because I don't think Agnew had this problem, is that if he takes the plea agreement in the Southern District, would he still now, could the federal government indict him because he's not a sitting president, because he can't pardon himself from those crimes, is my understanding.
Oh no, I think Pence wouldn't his successor, Vice President Pence, would pardon him.
Do you think he would?
Would pardon him from the federal charges, for whatever federal charges it might emerge.
Do you think Pence would do that? It didn't work out well.
It didn't
work out well for Ford.
No, but I don't know. I looked at Pence yesterday in that session in the Oval Office. He is like one of those cardboard cutouts of a vice president. I also think his fingers might not be entirely clean either. He was around during the Flynn business. He ran the transition. Remember that? He took over the transition from Chris Christie. So, I don't know, he could be embroiled in some way here.
Well,
when this happened. Yes, I imagine if he pardoned Trump, then that wouldn't bode well for his election campaign in 2020, would it?
No, that would...
But if he didn't, what would the Trump base do? The Trump base is about all the Republican Party has left. I mean, I don't see how Pence could win the primaries in the Republican primary then to become the nominee. So I think Pence is screwed either way.
Well, the other part of this, what is so strange about those memorandums last week, sentencing guidelines, when you take Cohen out of it, even though he obviously cooperated well with Mueller. Mueller felt he was good information and that the time should be served concurrently if he did get any on the federal level. Flynn gets no time at all because they think he gave so much information, and so much of it is still redacted, which is strange because that would mean it doesn't have anything to do with Cohen, it doesn't have anything to do with Manafort. So other than the president or his son or son-in-law, I'm not really sure who this is about, this whole other criminal charge, and the vice president, that you brought it up there. It's very strange that he was so involved obviously at the convention, took over the transition team. How could he not know now what we know? How could he have just totally been in the dark of everything?
Right. The only possible analogy I would make is George H.W. Bush, who we just treated very reverentially at his funeral, and I agree with everything that was said, but we shouldn't forget that George H.W. Bush insisted he was, quote, out of the loop with anything having to do with the Iran-Contra deal, which essentially consumed much of the Reagan's second term. And George H.W. Bush refused to turn over his diary notes to the special prosecutor, a special councilman named Lawrence Walsh. And after Bush ran in 92 and lost to Bill Clinton in that interim period, he pardoned Caspar Weinberger, who had been Reagan's defense secretary, and the trials from Iran-Contra was still going on, and the expectation was that Weinberger could reveal Bush's role in the Iran-Contra affair, so he pardoned him. So the out-of-the-loop defense was made by Vice President George H.W. Bush, and it worked rather successfully for him. And I think we have no idea, really, what Pence's role is in this presidency, whether he really is, you know, intimately involved in the back and forth, or whether he's just there to kind of take the brunt of Trump's anger every now and then, and maybe he's involved in legislative stuff, but he's not involved in any of the Russia collusion stuff having to do with Ukraine. And that came to the fore at the Republican convention. Now, surely Pence must know about that. So we'll see. I don't know. It's hard to believe that Pence was able to achieve this studied non-involvement that was so on display in that Oval Office session yesterday. You know, whether he has been able to do that throughout the campaign and throughout the 2 years so far of this presidency. I mean, it seems to me that Mueller could have the goods on Pence too, but I certainly haven't read that he's been interviewed by Mueller or whatever, but it's hard to believe that he could be simply, you know, again, out of the loop on all of this stuff, but may well be what he's claiming.
And this brings us to Mueller, because last week we learned more. We now know, after so many months of the Mueller investigation on Russian collusion, we now know that they did use Facebook, Russia. We now know that they did try to tap into voter rolls in 38 states. We know voters' information was compromised. We know that the Trump Tower meetings were going on well into 2016, and a $50 million penthouse was offered to Vladimir Putin. We know that the Russians offered synergy, political synergy, to the Trump campaign. We know that meetings took place in Trump Tower with Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner being around at that time. And we still have so much redaction. What in the world more could there be on this level?
Right, and the president still says no collusion, no collusion. When I think in the Washington Post report there was something like 14 Trump campaign officials were in touch with the Russians throughout the campaign and into the transition. And you have Maria Butina this week, who has now entered a guilty plea. She infiltrated the NRA on behalf of the Russians and brought a number of officials over to Russia to launch a gun rights group over there. She's got something to say also. I mean, it seems to me collusion has been proved. There is collusion. Now, I guess if there's a smoking gun, it would be a direct implication on the part of the president between, say, the $50 million penthouse for Putin and, okay, I'll work to get rid of the sanctions if, as long as you help elect me, or a specific agreement on the part of, say, a Jared Kushner or a Paul Manafort to, yes, let's work with you, you Russians. Let me show you what states you should go into. That specific connection has not been made. But my goodness, you can't say there's no collusion. There was collusion all over the place. But the exact quid pro quo has not been made public. And let's all remember, though, Mueller only reveals as much as he has to in these filings to achieve what he wants from the judge. So he's got a lot more that we don't know about. So I mean, when that report comes out, that will be the smoke bomb that really detonates in Trump's face.
Well,
how he handles it, he and Rudy Giuliani and other people working on Trump's behalf, you know, have tried to discredit the Mueller probe and discredit Mueller himself and saying they're all angry Democrats and all of that. But Mueller's approval rating still remains pretty high. I mean, I've done some research on the comparison with the Clinton probe with Ken Starr. Ken Starr's approval rating plummeted to 11% in 1998 when the impeachment proceedings were getting underway against President Clinton. And Clinton's approval rating soared to 73% at the same time. So if we saw Mueller suddenly tanking here and we saw Trump's approval going up from the early 40s, where it seems to be pretty safely locked in, and we saw that going up, and that would be a message from the public. But we're getting a very different message from the public. The public in the midterms basically, you know, voiced their resistance to this president and everything he stands for.
Eleanor, two questions here that I want to cover because I think they're interesting questions. The first one is President Trump, Vice President Pence, they either know are what they did do or what they didn't do. And Mueller, I think, knows what they did do or what they didn't do. So how long do they let this go on before they fire him? Or President Trump fires him? Do you think it's going to get to that point where they say, boop, you're gone?
Where the president directly fires Mueller?
Yeah.
You know, that would be testing another norm, because he's really not technically can't fire Mueller, that he would have to go through the attorney general. And so now we're in the process of perhaps confirming a new attorney general, William Barr. And though William Barr has taken some, you know, pro-Trump stands and anti-Mueller stands in his private writings and public utterances, he's still a respected lawyer who would, I think, follow the rule of law. And so I don't know that he'd want to be confirmed and have the first thing that he does is to fire Mueller. And if he's going to be confirmed, he's going to be asked to make all sorts of commitments to say that he wouldn't do that. So, I mean, if he fires Mueller, would he go through Whitaker now, who's the temporary attorney general, while he's got another one waiting in the wings? It would be like saying, I'm guilty and I'm desperate and this is what I have to do. It may come to that, but I don't see how the Congress would let that stand. I mean, I think and you could not just suddenly fold up that investigation and say, okay, you know, Trump has had his say, so we're all now going to go away. I mean, I think he's boxed in. I really do.
Interestingly enough, on a side note, before we come to the next question here, Cohen, in the hearing this morning, said the reason he did all this was blind loyalty to the president. So mm-hmm. That was his defense. The other question is, now, The deeper we get into this Russian collusion thing, which we're getting pretty deep for all the reasons we just talked about, in the South, they had an election where it was very close, and somebody was going around taking absentee ballots, throwing them away, getting people to sign, and there's talk of overturning that election now, or doing something, because something, federal investigators are looking into it. Now, at what point... Is it just tough luck, Hillary Clinton? She's not going to do anything. There's nothing she can do, because I would certainly say at some point she would say, listen, my election was fooled with by a foreign entity.
Right. Yeah, but I don't know. The vehicle would have to be either a president who appointed a commission to look into it, or... one of the chambers of the Congress to look into it. And President Trump is not going to do that, obviously. And the Republican Senate is not going to do that. And the Democrats are looking at the future and their own political advantage. And for whatever reason, and there are a lot of them, Hillary Clinton is viewed as, you know, yesterday's news, even though she won more votes than Trump did. The feeling is that, you know, she somehow let down her party. And I think, you know, she can certainly make the case that if it weren't for the James Comey's intervention and wasn't for the Russian intervention, that she would have won that election. I just don't see a redo, and frankly, I'm kind of even amazed at the hostility toward her, even thinking that she might even run again. I don't think that's going to happen either. But if anybody even mentions anything like that, the pushback is enormous.
Well,
so, I mean, I think that's just not a path we're going to go down. But I do think that. Delving into this in a more holistic way for the sake of history needs to be done.
Well, I think the interesting thing with Hillary is if she was not going to run again, if it was not on her mind when that op-ed was written, I would have thought the first thing she would have done is went to Twitter and said, that's not true. When she was asked about it out on her tour, she said, maybe I'll run for Prime Minister of Canada. She wrote a book about why she lost. She was asked in her first interview, do you accept the results of the election? She said, not until the Mueller report is over. She's been asked if she wanted to be president. She said, yes. I just don't know if in the end, you're right, I think she's not popular, and I think they do see her as somebody who let the party down, but I don't know how far this Russian investigation goes, and I think if it falls on the Trump campaign, which would encompass everybody, and you know, I'm starting to believe Russia could do whatever they wanted to in the 2016 election. If they can get into voter rolls, if they can get into 38 states, if they can get into Facebook, I'm not sure votes weren't changed. I it'll be interesting to see, and I certainly think Hillary Clinton... has some kind of a case here, right? Because I don't think, if we just talked about the situation before, if Pence was totally, he had to know something, if there is something. If he goes and Trump goes, I don't think Nancy Pelosi is just going to slip into the job. I think it would be something different. I don't know what it would be. I think there is precedent to overturn an election. I don't know why it couldn't be on that. I don't think you would do it over. I think it would just be an overturn to the way it should have been.
Yeah, well, I've had, you know, one friend of mine who worked in the Senate for years said, Joe Biden, install him as vice president or as president. And Republicans like him, Democrats like him. He's about the only really true consensus figure. You know, bring him in. Of course, I don't know what the vehicle is to do that. Chris Biden is now one of the top contenders for 2020, and I do think if the election were held today, he would win it pretty handily. But whether he can get through a primary where you have as many as two dozen, maybe even three dozen Democrats. I mean, this morning, Eric Swalwell, I think he's 36 years old, represents a Bay Area, California district. He's been very good. He's on the House Intelligence Committee, and he's on TV a lot. And this morning he said he's going to Iowa, that he's looking at the presidential race. So there's so many people who want to run. The notion of sort of bringing back Hillary Clinton, I think, is there's too many people now who want the job. So you have a kind of a built-in opposition there as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the only way she would ever have that position is if you could overturn a national election, which I guess that would be a Supreme Court thing. And I guess if you had the Mueller information, maybe she could. I don't know.
Right. Would she bring the suit?
I think she would have to.
Clinton versus Trump. That's interesting to think about.
I think it would be.
Bush v. Gore was the last presidential race that went to the Supreme Court.
And if Trump has to resign or is impeached, I think that would put her in an upper hand in Clinton versus
right.
Trump. I can't, the way Hillary Clinton operates, even out on this speaking tour, I just can't see when the report comes out, which has to do with her election, that she's just going to say, well, I guess I won, but tough luck.
Right.
Well, it'll be interesting.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Eleanor, it's always a pleasure. Happy holidays.
All right.
And hope to talk with you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll be back in 10 minutes.
...of the Belltone Building. Thank you so much for playing fair.
This is Marion Midgetfoot, staple of the Marion community.